Did you have ideas of what you wanted to talk about?
I've got one idea. I had something else, but I've gone blank on it. But I did have one idea, yeah.
Okay, well, let's hear yours.
So the thing I was curious, because I don't think we've ever talked about this, even as just friends. I don't think we've ever talked about this. Maybe we have. But so did you see the story that came out yesterday or day before, I forget, about the artificial intelligence chatbots at Facebook?
No.
Creating their own language.
Right. No, I did not see that story specifically. I mean, I know some things about that sort of thing. But.
So, you know, they're developing these chatbots, artificial intelligence chatbots. And the story that came out was that at some point the two chatbots started talking in a language that nobody understood to each other. The machines had, in fact, created their own language. They were using it to talk to each other.
There we go.
And the programmers had no idea what they were saying to each other.
That's crazy.
So they turned them off,
yeah,
and they reprogrammed them to tell them that they could only use English to talk to each other. They weren't allowed to use any other language, right? And turn them back on. Now, as you know,
I love this story.
As you probably know, like Bill Gates, Steve Wozniacki, Elon Musk, they're the people who are most out there saying that AI is like a thing that we have to be very wary about.
Sure.
You know, what Musk has said essentially is that we need to come up with regulations for AI before we ever actually create AI.
Yeah, right.
Because it's too late to be reactionary to it. Like once you create it, you know.
Yeah.
And people like Zuckerberg say, you're just being, you know, overly... You're just being reactionary, you know. You're just being silly, you know. You've watched the Terminator too many times, or whatever.
Right.
But what's your take on artificial intelligence? Are you?
Well, I mean, I only know what I'm told. I mean, I think that, the things that I hear in my day job. That I hear people talking about, the really the sort of facts of what have to be dealt with are, and this isn't really even judgment statements, this is just the truth, is that first of all, you know, it is coming. I mean, the intelligence being deployed all the time in all sorts of things, little and big. And so that is just the truth of the situation. And a few different things. One of the biggest urgencies for these regulations that I didn't know about Elon Musk, but that he's presumably talking about, one of the big urgencies is that we've created a base of, we've created this like base of users that, will sign up for anything, that we will, you know, that we all sign user agreements all day long. And give away, because they're too much, you know,
right.
They're too much to read, too much to digest. And so we have tuned humans to just like give away rights left and right, you know? And so there has to be this posture, then the engineering community has to have this ethic that like maximum security has to be turned on from the outset. It can't be opt into security. You've got to be opt out of it. Right.
Right.
You've got to, you know, in every turn, you've got to spend all this. And that's kind of what Musk is saying, is you got to get way out in front and imagine all the different things that could be done, not just by the makers of a given technology, but you have to also think in terms of, okay, so that company goes bankrupt. And then what happens to that data, you know? So it may not even be the entity that's collecting the data, but it could be second, third hand, you know, that you need to, there needs to be some kind of cognizance of.
I hadn't thought about that, actually. That makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I'd never thought of any of this stuff before people said it. And so you got to have this posture of You got to start out with this posture of that maximum privacy, maximum security is built in and the default. And the other thing is that we've got to quit collecting information just because we can. And so, like, there's kind of this, you know, big data is the new toy, right? And it's the 10-year-old toy now, but whatever. It's still basically a new toy. And there's kind of been this thing, like how it could be used for marketing or for security, you know, public, you know, kind of public safety and public security and that sort of thing. There's kind of been this notion of, well, we'll ask people for data, and if they're willing to give it, we'll collect these databases, and who knows how we'll use this, you know? Sure. And it's not necessarily for various purpose. But now they're saying, okay, we got to quit that, you know, to where you just sort of like ask for data that you may or may not be able to use today. Don't ask for one iota more of data than what you could get. And so that's what I hear about the AI thing. As far as like, I mean, I don't know. That's on kind of tangentially connected to what you're talking about and AI specifically, but just that, it's kind of this speeding, it's going to move exponentially faster than our brains can. And so we've got to do as much as we can to protect ourselves because it's not going anywhere. You know, this is going to occur. We've always done this. We always build stuff and then figure out how to make them safe.
Right.
Do our best to, you know.
Well, I think oddly there's all these other notions too, right? Like, Star Trek, The Next Generation dealt with some of these questions because one of their characters was an android. But there is this whole question of like, okay, when's an android a sentient being? Like, at what point do we have to start giving rights to an artificial intelligence, you know?
Right. And
how much control power do you want to hand over to an artificial intelligence? What kind of testing is it going to have to go through to make sure it won't just suddenly decide to kill us all? I mean, you know, it's like there are these questions that it seem like you really do need to answer before you ever start to do anything.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, people are just ignoring that. I mean, they're just,
I think there's some ignoring it. I think there's some like that's a nice notion. It is really hard to do that. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine how can this hurt us before you start playing with it, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And who, if we're going to say, okay, well, sure, yeah, that's true, but just don't put it out in the marketplace. Let's just do this in the lab. Okay, who's going to pay for that lab?
Right.
You know, like how much we kind of, the U.S. government, at least, has for 20 years scaled back the money it pours into research and development, testing lab type of thing. And by the way, that's not really, the United States has never been one to test stuff first and then put it in the market. That's part of the reason why we've had such a dominant economy for 100 years.
Sure.
We put stuff out there, you know.
Yeah. There's very few regulated industries in the U.S.
Yeah, and even when we do, we regulate them at the back end, right? I mean, we put the stuff out there first. You know, Europe, I mean, these are big generalizations, and boy, I'm really out of my depth. But as I understand it, you know, that's part of the big reason why, you know, research and development kind of has lived here for so long. It's because our culture is built to our regulatory environment lags from development, whereas I think in Europe, regulatory is basically done in tandem. That's largely been the case, you know, that it's kind of like built at the same time. And the other thing, too, is even like our business requirements, like our bankruptcy law. Somebody told me one time, this guy from Asia, and he said, everybody in the United States worries that the United States is going to fall behind in research and development. He says, there's so much built. This guy's from Japan, and he said, there's so much built into the U.S. like bankruptcy laws. Our bankruptcy laws are so much more forgiving than those in Asia. And so, you know, if you make a mistake in the United States, like if you come out with a technology and it doesn't work, or the market, there's no market uptake or that sort of thing, you start over, you know, and you start four more companies and that sort of thing. Whereas like in Japan, not only are the, and again, I've only been told this by a couple of people, so I hope it's true, but in Japan, not only are the bankruptcy laws so much harder, but the public stigma of failure is so much greater. And so that's such a hindrance to any sort of you know, kind of cutting edge.
Sure. No, that's a good point. We actually elected a president who went through bankruptcy. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just not.
It's obviously not a stigma here.
It's not a thing. We've done it before, I think. Harry Truman, has gone through bankruptcy. So, you know, that's just, it doesn't bother us that much. So it's a fairly, I mean, it's a good idea, of course. Everybody kind of gets that. Yeah, we really should figure out how this is going to hurt people before it comes out. But man, we didn't do it with cars. You know, we let cars, I mean, people got carved up like crazy before we put seatbelts in those things.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know.
That took what, like 70 years?
Yeah, exactly. And like, even in like non-health related ways, like, you know, we came out with credit cards before anybody started thinking about how to protect against fraud. I mean, you know, basically credit cards started getting issued in the 50s, and then the fraud industry like took off immediately.
Well, fire exits exist on buildings and can't be locked on buildings because of a very specific fire that occurred.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not like people just thought, oh, we should do this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We pretty much have to kill a bunch of people, or, you know, have a bunch of people be robbed before we,
it would appear that way. Yeah.
Before we draw in, you know, that sort of thing. But so I don't know. I mean, I find it, you know, when you ask me, you know, what I think about AI, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm scared of the stuff to be scared of. I'm also excited about the stuff that there is to be excited about. You know, it's.
Well, I do think about, you know, Mabel and I talk about this quite a bit. She's very down on the idea. And I do think this is true to some degree, that by the time our kids become old enough to drive, I'm not sure every car won't be a robot car.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, that's a real thing that's being developed.
Yes, it is.
I mean, the auto industries are betting everything on this.
Sure.
So it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, there's just already so much autonomy being deployed in cars now.
Right.
So at what point do you call a car autonomous?
Right.
You know, that's an interesting thing. I mean, there's already so much, you know, where it beeps at you, you know, the newer models, it beeps at you if you start to get near something and things like that. At what point, you know, anyway.
And I think.
Stuff like that.
I don't know. So to me, you think about that. And obviously, companies like Facebook and Google are obsessed, and Amazon are obsessed with AI for their own reasons that go more into like data analysis and stuff like that, like what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Than it is anything else. But I don't know. And they're going to get to that point, I would think, pretty quick.
It's
getting to that next level, you know, where you have
an
AI that can actually interact with people that becomes different. But
can you imagine, okay, just going on the other side of things, and believe me, I am not. I mean, I fear change. I'm a person who lives in 1971 as much as I do 2017, so I'm scared of all change, and I'm constantly, you know, insulating myself in the past. But imagine if we can get it right. Imagine if, like, we can get autonomous driving right.
Sure.
And where, I mean, can you imagine how much safer automobile traffic could be if it could actually be managed, you know, as well? If you could somehow, you know, still have freedoms and, you know, personal mobility. I mean, it could be just fantastic. It could be so much safer, you know, if you could actually manage it well without making it this horrible dystopian, you know, future. Right? Which nobody, I mean, you know, most people don't want. And I suspect that, you know, in time we'll get there. I think that there's going to be a lot of people, you know, there's going to be a lot of choppy waters between here and there, but it could be great. It could be great. And, you know, there's just all sorts of things. I mean, there's all kinds of the levels of, with the Internet of Things and all that monitoring around, and people get terrified of that. And I totally get it. But I also know that, like, when we had the ice storm here in Madisonville in 2009, like, the one person who was killed in Madisonville in 2009 was, you know, was a person who lived by himself and, in a trailer and that sort of thing. You know, it's a horrible story. It's a horrible story. And it just seems like he is, as I understood it, he was just kind of a person who kind of slipped off the map. You know, he was basically not participating in society. And, you know, whatever, he was not connected to any family. He was not, you know. Well, the Internet of Things can make the world a less severe place for that individual. You know, and that may sound really pie in the sky. And of course, there's all kinds of, you know,
yeah, no, I know,
small, yeah, between, yeah, here and there, but it could be all better. Right. You know, it could really be a lot. Well, it will be, or it won't happen. You know,
I know what you mean. I think it's interesting too, when you think about like the needs, and I don't really hear a lot of talk about this in the United States. But I know this is being researched, but the needs, say, for instance, of living in Madisonville, Kentucky, or Moscow, Idaho, for transportation versus living in New York City or Chicago.
Yep. Yep.
And the fact that, you know, like Dubai, there's a city they built in Dubai that I think along with MIT and a bunch of other partners. And one of the things they were trying to build inside the city was like a, not a trolley system, but like a some kind of little car system that, you know, you could walk out your front door, you could pick up this little car, it would take you where you wanted to go, drop you off. It's all solar powered. It doesn't need any, you know, it doesn't pollute, it doesn't use any kind of electricity or anything, with the idea being that in a large city, you know, you could eliminate cars,
yeah,
right, you could eliminate buses, you could eliminate all that stuff, you could,
sure,
provide people individual transportation. I don't know, I think it's funny when you think about the future and what it will be, you start to see, well, they're actually working on stuff that makes sense,
yeah,
at some point down the road, how it ever gets implemented or who pays for it, or that,
sure,
becomes the big issue, especially in a capitalist society like the United States, that becomes,
yeah,
a huge issue. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see kind of where this stuff goes in our lifetime, because I think most of this stuff's going to actually happen in our lifetime. So,
yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. I do think it's sooner than later. I mean, I think we'll see. I think it'll be, you know, 5 years from now, you know, it's just incredible how much things have changed in the last 5 years.
People, well, that's the thing. People, I mean, honestly, like when Marcus turned 16, I would not be surprised if every car on the market's driving itself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, yeah. It's wild to think about.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It is wild to think about. It'll be interesting to see, you know, I don't know. I mean, will capitalism end up being the right economic system for this next age? You know, I mean, maybe it will be, or, you know, maybe there'll be more public-private partnership. I mean, that's kind of our mode of state-run industry type stuff, is more public-private partnership.
But. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there's so much talk, and not to get political, but there's always so much talk about, you know, the 50s and life in the 50s in the U.S.
Yeah.
when the U.S. was booming. But, I mean, that's when the U.S. had a ton of cash on hand. from their tax base, and they were reinvesting that money into building things like the interstate system and upgrading the electrical grid. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, at some point you have to get that – you either have to socialize so you're not having to fight industry to do this stuff, or you have to come up with some way to do it where it can be self-sustaining. I don't know.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that you can also look at the 50s. It was the period that was right after this huge, huge historic investment by the federal government in infrastructure.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, yeah, there's a ton of money going into infrastructure.
We took, I mean, and that was the government doing it. I mean, it was, you know,
it wasn't through private partnership. It was the government doing it.
The government did. Well, it kind of was. I mean, you know, the Cervell plant in Evansville, you know, that makes airplane engines, you know, it was still a private company, and it was still, you know, but it gets this huge influx of public dollars, and then, you know, it completely changed life.
Well, I think a lot of people would argue that the 80s was a similar time, and that, you know, how much money did we dump into research R&D in the 80s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was an ongoing joke, right?
The $1,000 hammer or what?
Yeah, Doonesbury, you know, made fun of that. They had the whole, it was what was that comic? I forget. With Opus the Penguin. But Bloom County, yeah, they had that whole ongoing joke at one point where they had said, yeah, we'll build a Star Wars system. You know, they just got truckloads of cash sent to the...
That's hilarious. I never read Bloom County.
So, I mean, we forget how much money the federal government put into R&D in the 80s. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we got the technology boom we had, in part. So.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's a whole other...
It is a whole other thing.
A whole other conversation.
I don't know. I think it's exciting to hear. I mean, I think that stuff is, to me, it's more exciting than it is scary. And I'm surprised that I say that, you know, knowing myself, I'm just surprised that I say that.
I've seen the Terminator too many times. So
you see, I've never seen the Terminator.
Oh, well, there you go.
For me. Yeah, exactly.
You and Zuckerberg.
I have seen 2001 A Space Odyssey a number of times, but, you know.
That's a little different.
yeah. Dave's, based on the clips that I've seen of Terminator, Dave's a little more gentle. You know, computer Dave is a little more, or not Dave, Hal. Hal's a little more gentle in his killing Dave, but.
I always like the, you know, in Terminator, the phrase they always, you know, I guess it was in the first movie, you know, was that once they gave the computer control of everything, you know, it only took it like a nanosecond to decide, well, humans are a waste. Like, I don't know humans.
So. Yeah. I read something the other day. This is since we're off the chain here. Okay. And I don't even know. I don't understand if this is what is becoming. I have no idea if this is a crackpot thing or, you know, how rooted in science this is. But it was. There's an Atlantic article about, you know, that the climate change is so much. The climate crisis is so much worse than what any of us ever thought. But one of the things that was talked about in this was how there's becoming this like theory developing that there have been four major climate crises.
Oh, I read this story. Yeah, I read this story.
In history? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And we're in the middle of one right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And that you would have these waves where you've had these waves in history, in Earth's history, where so much of Earth, you know, the amount of inhabitable space on Earth for humans would have been reduced by dramatic amounts in each one of these climate crises. And that they were kind of proposing that that's what's going on now, is that gradually, like, you know, what's happening is that the equatorial regions now, you know, that by the end of the century, they're not going to be, you just can't have humans there.
Right.
You know, it's just going to be too hot. And even like in, there's going to be, you know, there's diseases thawing out in the North Pole and, you know, plague is thawing out in the, you know, different things like that. And so, you know, we're just going to have a lot fewer humans across the earth. What I thought was so interesting about that thing, and I mean, it starts to make, you know, like the myths, and I'm not saying that a myth is false even, you know, but it starts to make like these sort of like ancient stories like, oh, you know, if such a small area of the earth was inhabitable, then it starts to make all these like sort of mythical stories like, oh, that's why they would have believed that, you know, that would have been true, you know, stuff like the flood, you know, if you have. Anyway, it was just.
No, I know what you're
saying. It's ridiculous to even talk about it because I'm so sketchy on the whole details. But you could start to imagine, okay, yeah, if you reduce the area of the world that could be inhabited to, you know, to 20% of what it is now, then when these people were like, you know, writing the myth of Noah, then you start to get, okay, yeah, they could have believed that it was the only, you know, that Noah was the only survivor, and Noah suddenly turns into Elon Musk trying to draw to build a colony on Mars, right?
Sure.
You know, he becomes that guy as opposed to, you know, the most faithful of the faithful. You know, and it becomes a little bit more like, oh, maybe that's how that works.
Although, anyway, you know, science kind of confirms the whole Noah thing. Because,
is that right?
Well, our DNA, like if you track our DNA back, the differences are so subtle. What it shows is that at some point in the past, I forget how many years back, but at some point in the past, there was something that happened that reduced the Earth population down to just a few thousand people.
Yeah.
Right? Like literally all across the Earth, there was only, like there was a large population that reduced down to a very tiny population.
Yeah.
Now what happened, nobody knows, but there is the evidence that something literally happened that. That's why we're all so closely connected.
And to me, that totally jives with the whole climate, you know, these four climate crises theory.
Right, yeah.
Right? I mean, if you reduce it down to just like where, you know, very, very few people on the face of the earth can survive. I mean, one of the, you know, then also it starts to like where you could start to marry these like religious stories, you know, these religious traditions and say, oh, okay, yeah, that could have been. You know, anyway.
Well, if you watch the Nova episode about the super volcano, that'll get you scared. That's a good one.
This is the ultimate middle aged guy crackpot.
Well, especially since we live right by the super volcano, out here, which is Yellowstone.
Okay.
But
I've never seen that one. I got to see that.
Oh, it's really, it's good. It's good. So I forget how it's described. I forget how they term it, but essentially when it blows up, it implodes instead of explodes.
Okay. Right?
You get this weird effect where the lake will collapse into the lava.
Mm-hmm.
And that interaction between the water, this huge lake of water and the lava underneath creates this enormous eruption, which essentially will block off the ability to grow anything on Earth for about 15 years, crops or anything.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you know, people just start dying right and left, right?
Sure, of course. All right. Just starvation.
And people like us who are within like 1,000 miles of the...
You'll just be gone.
The explosion. Well, yeah, we'll just be killed. But that's an upbeat show. You should watch that.
Yeah, no kidding.
You should watch that one.
No kidding.
I remember watching that and thinking, yeah, this is kind of scary. But
well, and if you go with stuff like that, the other thing that has always, you know, the stuff that has perplexed me is like when archaeological digs where they find like cities, whole cities like buried,
right?
You know, and it's like, how did that stuff ever get totally buried? Well, that's how, right?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, the town in in on the Mississippi River.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, up there, right. The Broward County place. Yeah.
What is that fault? What's the fault?
New Madrid.
Yeah, New Madrid, Missouri.
Oh yeah. Real Foot Lake. Yeah.
New Madrid, Missouri, though it used to not be under the Mississippi River. Now it is. So I don't know. Yeah, this is the classic middle-aged.
Yeah, it really is. It's great. I like this. This could be. This could just be.
Glad I could bring our conversation down. No, I saw that story this week though, and I thought, you know,
I love it.
That's the most interesting AI story I've seen in a long time, because that's one that it kind of hits people. You know, it kind of hits people like in the gut, right? Like, oh, this is weird. You know, like, what were the computers saying to each other?
That is weird.
What were they talking about? So.
It's really weird. I'll have to check out that story. All right, listen, I got to go, but this was fun. What I wanted to talk about today, and maybe we can talk about those things, is what do I have to quit paying attention to football? Is that the only way out? You know, is that the only right thing to do? Don't answer today. Let's talk about
it. Ooh, that's a good topic.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we should go to the Huddle House in Mayfield on Wednesday. We can get our free weed, so.
Isn't that great?
People that do that stuff are funny, I have to say.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it.
I thought you'd like that one.
See, I never lose hope because of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I get that. Oh, this will be a good topic next week. I like it.
Yeah. You can tell by the tone of my voice of where I'm leaning.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.